All right, we're beginning here on Yud Bet Amud Aleph at the Mishnah. Mishnah says, "Ena miduma midameya evlefia cheshbon." Miduma is a mixture of truma and chulin. It's an instance where there isn't sufficient chulin in the mixture to be mevatel the truma. We know that the din of truma is to be mevatel at 100 to 1. So if you're less than that ratio of 100 to 1, you end up with produce that is miduma. Now, if you were to be 100 to 1 or greater, then the truma would be nitbatel, the mixture would be mutar, and you would just give a portion of that to the kohen, whatever the ratio of truma that's found in there, you would give it to the kohen because of gezel, because you don't want to steal from the kohen, there is truma in there. But as far as the iser of truma, the iser of truma has been nitbatel, and then the mixture is chulin, and you can do with it as you please. On the other hand, if you have a mixture where you do not reach that threshold of 100 to 1, then you have something that is miduma, that is a mixture of truma and chulin, and that can only be eaten by a kohen because of the truma that's mixed in it, and therefore you sell it to the kohen. It usually goes at a cheap price because there aren't so many eaters for it. It's only kohanim that can eat it, and you sell it to him X the amount of truma that's in there. You can only sell the chulin portion of it to him, and then he buys it at a generally lower price and consumes it. So that's the case of miduma. So miduma is when you have less than 101, so it's not botel. Now, if that miduma, that mixture already that you have now falls into another set of chulin, it only affects the new chulin that it falls into, the fiyah cheshbon, based on the ratio that exists in it. So Rashi and the Gemara, when explaining this, gives the following example. He says that Rashi actually uses the number 24. We'll use the number 23 because it's a little easier, and we'll explain why Rashi might have used 24. But if you have 23 of chulin, can I get one of truma? So you have sa'ah of truma and 23 sa'ah of chulin. That is miduma. That's a mixture that is not nitbatel. You don't have the ratio of 100 to 1. And so now you have dimua. That dimua, if a sa'ah from that dimua now falls into another set of chulin, then the ratio of which you are going to have to deal with it in the new chulin is 1/24, because you have now a 24 sa'ah. In the 24 sa'ah, 23 of it is chulin, 1 sa'ah of it is truma. So the combination makes it into 24, that means 1/24 is truma. So now if a sa'ah falls into the new chulin, you have now a ratio of 1/24 of truma. The reason that you use that number 24 is because there are 24 lugin in a sa'ah, and therefore you have 1 log worth of truma that fell into the new series, because you have 1/24 of a sa'ah that fell in is truma, because that's the ratio of truma to chulin in the first mixture. Now in the second mixture, you have a sa'ah that's comprised of 1 log worth of truma and 23 log of chulin. That means if in the new mixture there's 77 lugim of chulin, that would be sufficient to be mevatel the truma. 77 plus 23 is 100. You have 100 lugim now of chulin that is connected the truma. That's Rashi's view of what a meduma midameya elapi cheshbon is. Bali and Tosafot bring a view that even in the scenario where you have a mixture in the first one and then it falls into the second one, it's only the chulin in the second one that is counted towards the bitul of the truma from the first one. So yes, it's lapi cheshbon. We figure out how much truma was in the first one, but the chulin that we allow to use to be mevatel is only in the second one, not in the first one. So that is what it means, a hamiduma midameya lefi cheshbon, which is that the original mixture, the ratio of the mixture is what we look at when it goes to the next mixture. It gets mixed in with the next series of chulin. Now that is as opposed to what we find in many places in kashrut, basar b'chalav, which is something called Chaticha Naset Nevela, which is that once a piece of meat has become not kasher, we no longer look at it as being partly not kasher, partly kasher. We look at it as being kulo asur. Now it becomes a chaticha of isur. And that chaticha of isur, then now when you falls into a new pot, into a new item, you have to have 60 times that item or that chaticha. Even though the chaticha is comprised of isur and heter, once they mix together the isur and heter, then they become a single unit. That single unit now becomes all asur. And when you go into another unit, to a new series of items, you take it as if that whole item is asur. So that's what we don't say over here. The question is, why? Why do we say normally, chatichat nase nevela, whereas over here, we don't say that, and we say lefiya cheshbon. So there are a number of ways to distinguish between the two items. One item, first of all, is chatichat nase nevela. Is that only applicable by basar b'chalav? Or is it also applicable by shar isrei ha-Torah? That we discussed extensively in Chulin, as to whether it's only or uniquely associated with basar b'chalav, or is it also associated with other isrei ha-Torah? If you say it by other isrei ha-Torah, it may only be true belach belach, which is with liquid items, where when they mix together, they mix thoroughly together. And so therefore, there we say chatichat nase nevela, but by the isur that we're speaking about over here, with regards to whether it's, we're going to see in a second, se'or or dry tumah, which is called yavesh, b'yavesh, dry goods, there the mixture isn't mixed to the point where you would say chatichat nase nevela. That's the way the Ramban distinguishes between chatichat nase nevela and the fiyash cheshbon that is found in our Mishnah. You could also possibly differentiate between derech bishul versus what we have over here. Derech bishul, bishul causes the transference of flavor to the entirety of the other item. And so therefore you can't have the heter exist anymore because the iser has permeated. It has gone everywhere within that heter. And so since it has permeated or distributed amongst the whole heter, that's why it's a chatichat nase nevela. Here we're not talking about bishul, we're talking about chimutz, we're talking about yavesh b'yavesh. Since there's no bishul over here, therefore it's not considered to be chatichat nase nevela. That's the view of the Ritva to distinguish between the Fiyah Cheshbon and the issue of Chatichat Nase Nivela. Another way to distinguish is between here where you have Chimutz and you have dry goods by which there's no transference of flavor and there's no real impact from the mixing of the items except the fact that they are mixed. And that is that the dry items of the Trumah just mix together and the Chimutz, even though it has an effect, it doesn't have an effect on the taste. It simply has an effect in what the Orzarua calls the reyach, the pungency of the chometz, which causes the bread to rise. And therefore, we would not see it as becoming chatichat nase nevela. Or the other way to express it, which seems to be the simple way to read the Mishnah, is that this is according to those that believe ein chatichat nase nevela. There are those that hold chatichat nase nevela. Our Mishnah does not hold chatichat nase nevela, and therefore it says everything is done lefi cheshbon. So we gave you the cheshbon by the truma, which is that we explained that you had a mixture that had 24 in total, 23 chulin, one of truma, and then it fell into another series of chulin. But if it falls into a new series of chulin, we don't say that it's all truma now. We say only 1/24 of it is truma, and therefore you only need that one out of the 24 to be nidbatel between the chulin from the original mixture and the chulin from the new mixture. And that's what we said, that there was 23 chulin from the original mixture, 77 from the second mixture. So the total of 100 chulin can then offset or be nidbatel the one of truma. And as I noted before, Rashi uses the number 24 and not 23. It's possible that Rashi is saying 24 and not 23 is because it depends on what total you need in order to be nidbatel. It's a question in the Rishonim. When we say that truma is nitbatel 100 to 1, does that mean 100 chulin to 1 of truma? Or does that mean 101 of chulin can negate the 1 of truma? You need 100 more of chulin than you have of truma. And so it would be 101 to 1. And that would maybe be the difference between 24 and 23, is that Rashi uses 24 and 77, which equals 101, versus the alternate gear, so the Shita Mikubetz it brings, and others bring that it's 23 and 77. Which equals 100 to 1, so that might be the machloket, or it might be just a simple girsa issue, which is that they were trying to get into 24 lugin, again, which is the how many lugin there are in a sa'a, and somebody mistakenly wrote 24 down, but 24 is the total, it's 23 of chulin and 1 of truma to get to the total of 24, so you could just say it was a mistake. I'd like to suggest that maybe it's this machloket, whether you need 100 or 101 to mivatel the truma. So that's as far as zimua. Then we move on to next, which is Eina Mechumatz Michameitz Elefi Cheshbon. When it comes to Seor, when it comes to a rising agent, a leavening agent, then the leavening agent is only according to the Cheshbon, again, the ratio of what is there. Now, this is much more difficult than the Midumua case, because the Midumua case, we deal with ratios. We know that 100 to 1 is the Bitul. But Chimutz does not work that way. Chimutz, if it's Truma, that is the leavening agent, if it can have influence over the dough that it's in, even though it's at a ratio that is greater than 100 to 1, there's more Chulin than this Chimutz of Truma at a greater ratio than 100 to 1, nevertheless, it's not Batel. That's because the Chimutz is so essential and so impactful on the item. It permeates, again, the entirety of the item. It affects the entirety of the item. Therefore, a Chimutz or Chametz is something that has a disproportionate impact. And so the test is, can this Chametz, can this leavening agent single-handedly leaven the whole item or dough that's there? If the Truma has within its power sufficient amount of Chimutz to cause the entire dough to rise and to become bread, then that would make it into a mixture of Truma and Chulin, or to make it a Surah because it has Truma in it. If the Truma does not have sufficient Chimutz to do that, then it would not be a problem, assuming that there's 100 Chulin to the one of the Truma. There you would need 100 to 1 at least, but the fact that it can't be Mechametz the entire item, then it would not be considered Dimua. And so then Rashi explains over here, if you have an Isav Chulin, Shenitz Chamsa B'Seor Shel Truma, you have a dough of Chulin that you use the leavening agent, the rising agent, the sour dough that came from Truma, or a Kula Asura that affects the entire Chulin that was sufficient in there to cause it to rise. The entire thing now is Asura. If then a piece of that Isa now falls into another one, I mean the sour dough that is from there, now you can take it from this new batch that you've grown and then put it into another Isa, Shel Chulin, O Michmatza Eina Osarta, then it only is oser based on the amount of truma that is mixed in there. Klomar, im nafal b'yisachwana min arishona, shi'ur gadol kolkach. There was so much from the first one that fell into the second one, shehebo misor shel truma shenit chamsa mimenu, that there would be sufficient se'or from the first dough that it could cause a rising in the second dough. So if you've taken sufficient amounts of the first dough to the point where the chimutz, the rising agent in the first one, which was truma, then would be impactful on the second one by itself, then that would be problematic. And the second one would also be truma. But if you take from the first one, and it does cause rising in the second one, but there is not enough truma in there to do it on its own, it requires the assistance of the chulin, then that second one would not be truma. And that's what it means, lefi echeshbon, which is that you have to know how much truma is coming from the first dough to the second dough, and if there's sufficient chimutz power in that truma that's coming from the first dough to the second dough to cause it to rise in the amount that you've taken from the first dough, then that would be problematic. If not, it would not be problematic. Now, Tosafot does not love Rashi's explanation. He brings Rashi and he says, velo nira. Says, I don't think that's right. He brings a number of reasons why he thinks that it's not the right way to explain it. Then he says, lakach nira. He thinks this is the way the Faresh came in. Kigon kazayit so'or shel truma, kazayit so'or shel chulin. You have kazayit of truma and a kazayit of chulin that are both rising agents, leavening agents. Shnehem bein. And they're both existence extant now. Naftula toch isay shel chulin. And they fall into a bread of chulin, v'chimtso. And they successfully cause it to rise. If each one of them independently would not have sufficient means to cause it to rise, ain't asura. That's not asura. That's according to the ratio or the cheshbon. How much truma is in here? Even though there's truma and chulin together, and together they cause the chimutz here, since the truma by itself couldn't have done it by itself, then when it's mixed together with the chulin, it doesn't matter, and that doesn't make the dough that you have here of chulin asur, because the fi cheshbon, we have to look at the quantity of truma chimutz that is there to know whether it will work or it won't work, and that'll be the determining factor. Vezeh mamash ki ha-mishnah, and that is exactly like the mishnah that the gemara is going to bring. Vein hamayim she'uvim poslim et mikveh ela fi cheshbon. Water that is non-rainwater, it's drawn water that you put into the mikveh, that ruins the mikveh. The shiur is that if you have shlosha lugim mayim shuvim, three log of drawn water that falls into a mikveh, that is pusel the mikveh. Now what we have here is There's some sort of calculation ratio that we have to pay attention to when it goes into the mikveh. And Rashi here says, we'll see you in the Gemara. The Gemara will explain exactly what this is. So we're not going to spend a lot of time on it now because of the fact that the Gemara will go into much greater detail with regards to this. And when it comes to the ashes of the parah aduma, that you make the mechatat, the waters of the mechatat, which are the ashes of the parah aduma in the mayim chayim, that mechatat, osim mechatat, elaim matan efer. That only becomes mechatat when you place the ashes into the water. And so we're going to see in the Gemara that that specifies an order. The way that you make mechatat is to put efer into water. So the proper order or the proper way to do it is to place the efer into the water when the water is already in the kli. And again, we'll discuss this at the end of today's daf. Rashi's girsa in this part of the Mishnah is a mechatat naseit mechatat el imatan efer, and that is that you can only create the mechatat when you put the efer into the mayim. But then in that case, you have a little bit of a question as to how that's relevant to the cases before, or that which came before in the Mishnah. The other hand, the girsa that we have in the girsa of the Gra is ein mechatat osin mechatat. The mechatat can't make mechatat el imatan efer, unless you put in the ashes or the dirt directly. And that is because that's the only way to mekadesh the mechatat. If the ashes were mixed in with water beforehand and then you pour them into the waters now, that would not be mekadesh the mechatat. That's what it means. Ein mechatat osim mechatat. That existing mechatat can't make new mechatat except by putting in efer directly and not through a mixture of items that are coming in. Then it might actually connect to that which we said before in the Mishnah, which is in the previous cases, we said that a mixture, we go by the cheshbon when it falls into something else. Over here, we're saying that even when you come in with a mixture, you don't even look at the cheshbon. You don't look at it as if it exists at all. It's not even the fiyah cheshbon over here, and it is pasul de gamre unless you put the afer itself into the waters. And then that extends into the subsequent statements of the Mishnah, which is ein beta pras ose beta pras, no truma kar truma, and no tmura ose tmura. Now we move on to a slightly nuanced, different genre of items here, which is vein beta pras ose beta pras. You have a beta pras. There are other types of beta pras that are brought in the Mishnah and Olot, but what we're discussing over here is an instance where there's a field unbeknownst to the owner that had a kever, that had a gravesite in it. He did not know that the gravesite was there, or it was there and they forgot about it, or they lost it, they don't know where it was, and then he plowed over the field. Our fear is that when he's plowing the field, he distributes the bones from that kever all over the field. And that creates what's called a beta pras. It's a problem in general that we assume to be drabanan, it's a rabbinic issue. And the issue is that we assume that the bones were distributed, but the bones are fragments that were distributed. We don't find sufficient bones in one place to create tumat ohel. If you go to the Mishnayot and Olot, there's certain minimums that you need from a mate in order to have tumat ohel. And in a beta pras, you're not going to meet those minimum structural requirements of the skeletal remains. And what you have then is, you have etzem kiseora, which is you have bones that are less than the requisite amount to have tumat ohel, which is usually rov minyan, rov binyan. There are other things also that can make it into tumat ohel if you have kizait min hamet. Other things that make tumat ohel, but that wouldn't exist here. The only way we have here are little fragments of bones. Fragments of bones don't have tumat ohel, but they have tumat maga and tumat masa, which means that if you touch it, you come into contact with it, you become tamei. Or if you move it or carry it, then you also become tamei. So our fear is that once this field has been plowed over and there are fragments of bones everywhere, if we allow people to cross through the field, then there's a possibility that they become tamei from coming into contact with those fragments of bones, because they won't be ma'ayol on them, won't matter, but if they come into contact with them, either by touching them, stepping on them, or by moving the ground that moves the bone, that would also be a problem, and then you become tameh. So, chashash mi d'rabanan, we don't let people cross through a beit hapras, which had a kever that was plowed into this field. Now, that can be overcome. The Gemara in Pesachim and other places says that there is also a dispensation which allows you to go through the field if you either get down on your hands and knees and blow in front of you, so you clear away any loose dirt and you can see if there are bones there and you go through it, or it's a place to dash barabim. It's a well-worn path. It's a well-worn path then any bone fragment that was there was already compressed into the ground, and you won't come into contact with it anymore. Plus, if the ground is compacted, it won't shake when you're walking on it, and then you won't have a problem with the bones. So those are two dispensations that the Chachamim give in certain instances. It's actually a machloket as to when those dispensations apply, both in the Gemara as well in the Rishonim, as to whether those are always available, or only in certain instances are they available. And we actually discussed it back in Chulin about the Beit HaPras, the machloket between the Tosafot and Rashi, as to how to apply those dispensations in the sequence of the Gemara. And Rashi says over here, the Beit HaPras comes from the word prusa, which means pieces. That's because the bones have been broken into small pieces and distributed over the field. The Rambam in the Perush of Mishnayot says the word peres comes from the word prisa, to spread out, and that's what it means. Beit HaPras, Beit HaPras means an area over which this kever or these atzamot were spread out. Tosafot and Nazir brings a third possibility, which is that the word peres comes from the word parsa, which is to walk or a foot, and that is because a Beit HaPras is somewhere where you can't walk because of the tumah that's found in that area. Now what the Mishnah says is a Beit HaPras, osin Beit HaPras. If you have already a field that has a Beit HaPras in it, then if you plow from that field out to another field, that Beit HaPras does not extend to the new field that's around it. So we have a limited scope in which we say that these bones were distributed. Once they've been distributed, then we don't say if you start plowing from wherever they are distributed into other fields, then now you extend the range of the Beit HaPras. That doesn't happen. It's only the first creation that is that way. It's not the subsequent creations that are that way. Vein truma, achar truma. If you already have separated off truma from tevel, then you can't take truma off of that tevel again because it's no longer tevel. And therefore you can't have truma after truma. Vein tmura, oset tmura. And this is why it's brought in our mesechta, because tmura can't create tmura. Hekdesh rishon, something that has kodesh, can create tmura, can be exchanged onto another animal to create tmura. But that second hekdesh, hekdesh sheni, which is from the tmura that was created, it cannot pass on to another animal tmura. There's no tmura oseh tmura. So that's a similar genre to what we saw here. That ain beit hapras oseh beit hapras, ain tmura char tmura, now ain tmura oseh tmura. Then we have this statement that we've seen numerous times over the last two dafim, which is lo avlad oseh tmura, a fetus that is born to kodoshim, vlad kodoshim, does not create tmura. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Havlad Oseh Tmura. And we quoted Rabbi Yehuda numerous times to be the author of positions that we were stating to defense of Bar Poda, that it was Rabbi Yehuda authored them because there you have a Vlad. A Vlad Kodeshim can make Tmura after it is born. Amrulo, Hekdesh Oseh Tmura, Vein Havlad Oseh Tmura. The Chachamim disagree with him and say, Hekdesh can create Tmura, but Vlad Kodeshim cannot create Tmura. And we'll discuss in the Gemara in tomorrow's daf as to why that is. Now, the Gemara says, Mantano, who's the author of our Mishnah? I'm Rav Chiya Baba, I'm Rav Yochanan, Deloki Rabbi Eliezer. It's clearly not Rabbi Eliezer. It's not. We have a Mishnah, Sa'a Shel Truma, Shenafla Lepachot Me'achulin. You have a Sa'a Truma that fell into less than 100 of Chulin, it's not Batel, Vin Nidmeu. Now you have Dimua, Vinafal Mina Dimiduma Lemakom Acher. And then this mixture falls into another area of Chulin. Rabbi Eliezer Omer, Midamea Kitruma Vadai. The Dimua, that mixture, is basically Chatichat Naset Nevela. It all becomes like it's Truma. So even though the ratio of whatever the item was, again, we were using numbers before of 23 of Chulin to 1 of Truma, so even though there's a ratio of 23 to 1, and therefore any sample you take out of that group should have that ratio of 1 24th Truma, 23 24th Chulin, nevertheless, Rabbi Eliezer says we see it as all being Truma. It says, oh, Truma, when it falls into the next series of Chulin, you're going to need 100 Chulin. Can I get the entire 24? Because the Meduma is like Truma Vadai, or like Chatichat Naset Nevela. The way that we have it in the Gemara here is, Shani Omer, Sa'a Shenafla, Hisha Alta. Because I say the Sa'a that fell in is the same Sa'a that you pulled out. So you never know whether you're getting a mixture, a sample of the ratio of Chulin to Truma, or maybe you're getting all Truma over here. You're only getting a Sa'av Truma that's being pulled out of there. Now, that is not found in the Mishnah. It is a comment of the Gemara that explains the position of Rabbi Eliezer. Why is it that Rabbi Eliezer thinks that Meduma is like Truma Vadai? That's because he's choshesh that the sa'ah that fell in is the same sa'ah that you are pulling out. If that's the case, you could have a full sa'ah worth of truma here, but that would then limit Rabbi Eliezer's opinion to the amount of truma that's there. In that case, if you state it that way, you can't have more than the amount of truma in any given sample that you take out. It can't be greater than the totality of truma that fell in there. That's both according to the way that Rashi and the Tosafot explained the Chachamim's position before. This would be Rabbi Eliezer's dissenting opinion. The Balei HaTosafot also add on that within Rabbi Eliezer's opinion, it is true that if you had a mixture that was 100 to 1, there was 100 chulin keneged the one of truma, but according to Rabbi Eliezer, you still are required to take off a sa'ah of truma because of gezel hashevet. If you didn't take off that sa'ah and then this mixture fell into another item, then that whole mixture is problematic, or chatichat nasen nevela, because of the truma that's inside of it. Therefore, when it falls into another tarobet, into another mixture, that second mixture needs 100 to 1, 100 times the sa'ah that fell from the first mixture into the second mixture, because the first mixture has basically the truma still inside of it, at least midirabanan. And that's why, even though it's 100 to 1 and it's a batel, you still can't eat from it until you're mafrish that sa'ah truma. And until you do such, then that which is left behind in this mixture is considered to be like truma when it falls into another mixture. And the Chachamim say exactly what's found in our Mishnah, that it's only midamat based on the cheshbon, based on the ratio. The sample that you take from there has that ratio in it. That ratio is what's impactful in the next series of chulin that falls in there. It only needs sufficient chulin to wipe out the truma in the ratio that you have it there. In our case, again, it would be 1/24th, and therefore you'd only need 77 worth of chulin and the new to wipe out the truma from the first mixture. And that's according to Rashi. According to the Balei HaTosafot before, even according to the Chachamim, you can only use the chulin from the second grouping to be mevatel the truma from the first mixture. Now we move on to the chimutz. V'ena mechumatz mechametz. Am Rabbi Av, am Rabbi Yochanan, matnitin t'lok Rabbi Eliezer. Our mission is not like Rabbi Eliezer once again, it's not. Se'or shel chulin v'shel truma sh'naflu l'toch ha'isa. You have se'or, a rising agent, a leavening agent, a sourdough of chulin, a sourdough of truma, that fell into an isa, into a dough of chulin. V'lo b'zek de'lachmitz, v'lo b'zek de'lachmitz. Each one individually, each sourdough individually, that of chulin and that of truma, does not have sufficient means to cause it to rise or to leaven. V'nitztarfu v'chimtzo. And they successfully, when they are there together, in their joint effort, they cause it to rise, they cause the leavening of the isa. Rabbi Eliezer Omer, achar acharon aniba. I go after whichever one was the latter one to fall in. Chumim amrim, ben shenafal isur lechatchila, whether the isur was the first thing to fall in. Ben shenafal isur basof, or whether the isur was the latter one to fall in. Lo'olam en asur achebo kedei lachmitz. It's not asur until you have sufficient amount in the truma by itself in order to cause the chimutz, or in essence, the position of the chachamim is zeh v'zeh goreim is mutar. When you have two items that are the cause of whatever happens, then both of them are considered to be contributory. And if they're both contributory, then they are mutar, because you can't then place the quote-unquote blame or the reason for the rising here on the item that is asur. And so v'zeh v'zeh goreim, where you have both chulin and truma, rising agent, sourdough, that are causing the rising over here, that is not problematic. That will be mutar. So that's the view of the Chachamim. According to the Balei HaTosafot, that is exactly what's found in our Mishnah. That's the explanation for the case in our Mishnah. And that's why Tosafot says, if you explain our Mishnah that way, then the Mishnah that we brought over here makes a lot of sense, because it's exactly like the case of our Mishnah. And we also then have the Chachamim, who are the authors of our Mishnah. According to Rashi, the case in the Mishnah is not exactly like this case here. It's a different case. It's not an issue of zeh v'zeh goreim. It's a question of whether you have sufficient truma when you take from the first series over to the second series, whether you have sufficient truma there in order to cause the rising in the second item. But it's clear, according to that, in the first item, it was asur. Again, it's a different case that's mentioned in the Mishnah, and that's what bothered Tosafot about it. As Tosafot points out, you don't need the Mishnah that we just quoted to prove that to you, because you could have learned it from the previous Mishnah we brought with regards to Rabbi Eliezer's opinion with Meduma. And his opinion there should carry over here into the issue of chimut, which according to Rashi is for the same reason, which is al-pi ha-cheshbon. You have to figure out how much truma was in the first item, and then it is impactful on the second item based on the ratio of the truma in the first item. And therefore, why do you need to bring a new Mishnah to tell you that it's not Rabbi Eliezer? It would be obvious from the first Mishnah that we brought with regards to Meduma that would be his opinion here as well. Now, according to Rabbi Eliezer, Eliezer says that you go after Acharon Aniba. It's the latter one. So taking it at face value would say that if the Isur, the Truma, fell first, and then the Chulin fell, the Chulin is the governing item over here because it was the latter one, and it would be Chulin. If it was the other way around, the Chulin fell first, and then the Truma fell afterwards, then it would be that it is a Isur because the Truma is the one that caused it in the cumulative sense to reach the point where it was a Isur. That would be the simple at face reading of Rabbi Eliezer. But as Rashi points out, the Gemara in other places notes, that Rabbi Eliezer doesn't literally mean Acharon Aniba. That's only true if you pulled out the item beforehand. Which means that if Truma fell in, sourdough Truma fell in, if you removed it, and then Chulin sourdough fell in, and then it caused it to rise, because now the combination of the two caused it to rise, but the Truma's already moved, then it would be Chulin. But if the Truma remains in there, and then the Chulin falls in second, it'd be Asur. Then both of them contributing are problematic, or Zeb Zeb Goreim is Asur, according to Rabbi Eliezer. And therefore, it doesn't matter if the Truma fell first or the Truma fell second. As long as the Truma is still in there, it'd be problematic, according to Rabbi Eliezer. If you pull out the Truma first, and then only afterwards does the Chulin fall in, then it would be okay, then it would be Mutar, according to Rabbi Eliezer. So that's the machloket here, is whether, according to Rabbi Eliezer, Zeb Zeb Goreim is basically Asur. According to the Chachamim, Zeb Zeb Goreim is Mutar. As Tosafot says, that's exactly the case in our Mishnah. Rashi has a slightly different case than what the Mishnah says over here, but it's a similar idea, which is that you have to have sufficient rising agent within the Truma to cause the rising to happen in order for it to be Asur. Alright, now, Ve'ina Mayim Shuvim Poslim Et HaMikveh. Mantano, once again, who's the author of this position? Rabbi Chir Ba'avar, Rabbi Yochanan, Rabbi Eliezer Ben Yaakov. It's got to be Rabbi Eliezer Ben Yaakov. It's not. Rabbi Eliezer Ben Yaakov Omer, Mikveh Sheyesh Bo 21 Sa'ah Megishamim. You have a mikveh that has 21 Sa'ah worth of rainwater. Mimaleh B'Kateif 19 Sa'ah U'Patkan HaMikveh. You can bring Mayim Shuvim. You can draw the remaining water, the remaining 19 Sa'ah. And Potkan the Mikveh means that you pour them in through Hamshacha. You don't pour them directly into the Mikveh. You pour them into a groove going into the Mikveh and then they flow into the Mikveh. Hamshacha is a mechanism for being Mitair, the waters of Shuvim. Mayim Shuvim that are drawn and poured directly into the Mikveh. If you have 3 Login, even 3 Log, it is Pasul. It's probably a Dinder Abonon. You can't have that amount of Mayim Shuvim in the Mikveh. And Hamshacha takes away, removes the problem of the water being drawn and makes it into a more natural water or flowing water that's going into the Mikveh. And then you, as if you're making it like a river, part of a natural water that is flowing into the Mikveh rather than pouring it in. And the reason being, maybe, is because we consider the water to be batel to the karka, or as if it's no longer mayim shuvim, but rather mayim of the karka, because it's batel to the karka. That's the view of the Reim. And then the Rashba adds in a dynamic that not only is it batel to gabei karka, but as it makes it as if it is noveya min karka. If you do that, the hain tohorim, they are tahor, meaning that you have now 40 sa'ah, which is the minimum threshold or size of a mikveh. Because a shiva mitaheret beribia ubam shacha. There are 2 things that can help take care of mayim shuvim. Mayim shuvim with psulim for the mikvah, that can be cured, or that problem can be overcome with the following 2 things. One is ribia, more megishamim than mayim shuvim that you have here. 40 sa'ah, 21 of the sa'ah were megishamim, was rainwater. The majority was rainwater, so that's ribia. And hamshacha, that the mayim shuvim were not poured directly into the mikveh. They were poured on the side, and then it flowed into the mikveh, which is called hamshacha. So those 2 things together will cause a tahara, a cleansing of the mayim shuvim, and allow the mikveh to be kasher, according to Rabbi Lezer ben Yaakov, and michlau. So from this you would infer, or deduce, that the Rabbanan savre, the riviyah hamshacha, lo. That according to Rabbanan, it's not sufficient, the riviyah and hamshacha. That's not enough to get rid of the problem of Mayim Shiluvim. According to Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov, it is sufficient. According to the Chachamim, it is not sufficient. And our assumption now is that Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov is the author of our Mishnah, because he says, Ein Mayim Shiluvim Poslim Elofi HaChashbon. And the Cheshbon over here is, how much Megishamim do you have versus how much Mayim Shiluvim? As long as you have more Megishamim than you have of Mayim Shiluvim, and the Mayim Shiluvim came in Derech Hamshacha, then the mikveh is a kosher mikveh. The waters are kosher waters for the mikveh. Once you establish that our Mishnah is authored by Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov, our Mishnah sounds like it's going lekula, and that means that the Chachamim's position is the Chumrah. And if the Chachamim's position is the Chumrah, then what you would infer from the statement of Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov is that there are Michlal de Rabbonin Sabrei, de Reviyah Bamshacha lo, it doesn't work at all. But then we have a problem because if Yata Rabin Amrab Yochanan Shuva Shimshihua Kula Torah. If you have Mayim Shuvim where you pour them through Hamshacha, you put them into a groove that then float into a mikveh, if the entire mikveh is made up of that water, Torah, Mani. Who's the author of that position? Lo Rabbonon Velo Rabbi Eliezer. That's not the Rabbonon, and that's not Rabbi Eliezer, because we said before that Rabbi Eliezer believes you need Riviyah, you need the robe to be Megishamim, and you also need it to be that you did Hamshacha. Over here, all you had was Hamshacha, you're missing the robe of Megishamim. And then we said that, according to the Rabbanan, that if you had Riviyah and Hamshacha, that's not enough. That's not sufficient. If that's the case, then over here, even if you did it through Hamshacha, it doesn't help you. So the Gemara says, Ella, Omar, we have in our Gemara Rabba, other Girsot, like in Rashi, and other places have Omar Rapapa, El Amar Rapapa, the Pi Cheshbon Kelim. The Cheshbon that we're speaking of here is not a Cheshbon of how much water, but rather a Cheshbon Kelim. And as Rashi says over here, we're retracting that view that the Chachamim are the Chumrah, and rather we say that the Chachamim are the Kula, and then they will be the authors of that position of Kiyat Rav and Rav Yochanan, that BLP, the Chachamim, that you only need Amshacha, you don't Reviyah, you don't need the Pi Cheshbon at all, but then, you can't set up our Mishnah as being Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov, being Lefi HaCheshbon, which he says you need Hamshacha, plus you need the Cheshbon, you need the robe to be made Geshamim. Because if you set it up as Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov being that author, that would imply that the Chachamim are the Chumrah. And now you tell me the Chachamim are the Kula in order to understand where we got the position of Kiyat HaRab and Rabbi Yochanan. So what we have to do now is say that Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov is not the author of our Mishnah, and we're going to have to find a different author for this position of Lefi HaCheshbon with regards to Mayim Shuvim. So what is the Lefi HaCheshbon in our Mishnah? Lefi HaCheshbon Kelim. Depends how many utensils were used when the water was poured in. Yosef ben Choni. And the author of our Mishnah is Yosef ben Choni. Titanio. That we have a Breita in the Tosefta. Shloshat Lugim Mayim Shuvim. These three Lugim of Mayim Shuvim that fall poured into a mikveh. Shnavlu Lemayim. Bishnaim Shloshat Kelim. If they were fell or poured into the mikveh with two or three kelim, then it's problematic. Even if it was poured in there with four or five kelim, it's still pasul. Doesn't matter how many kelim it took to get the three log in there, it's still pasul. Yosef ben Choni omer, it's problematic for the mikveh. If it is two or three kelim, then it is pasul. If you do it in four or five kelim, it's not posel the mikveh. What's the difference between two or three kelim and four or five kelim? So as Rashi explains over here, two or three kelim, if you divide three log into two or three kelim, then the minimum amount you have, if you distribute evenly in each kli, is a minimum of a log. So for three kelim, each kli has a minimum of a log in it. If it's two kelim, it's even more than that. It's a log and a half in each kli. And if you have four or five kelim and it's distributed evenly, and no single kli has a log worth of Mayim Shuvim in it. And that's why Yosef ben Choni says that it's not posel the mikveh, because in each Mayim Shuvim that fell in or was poured into the mikveh, it was less than a amount of a log. And the Rabbeinu Gershom says, the fact that it's less than a log is, habadavar chashuv uposel. When it's a log or greater, it's something that is chashuv, and therefore it is posel. But if it's below a log, then it's not chashuv, and therefore it's not posel the mikveh, and that the cheshbon of the Mishnah means the amount of kelim that are the logim of the mortars that posel the mikveh. If you have that number, then it's posel the mikveh. If greater than that number, it isn't posel the mikveh. And that way we take away the issue of Elazar ben Yaakov and the Chachamim from our Mishnah, and we can use the Chachamim being the Kula from Elazar ben Yaakov to explain that position of Rabbi Amar Rabbi Yochanan. So Tosfot is bothered by this explanation. He brings from the Shmuel Meluniel that this isn't the way that the Gemara normally works. You don't have a case where you say, according to Rabbi Chir Ba'aba, at least at first we thought that Rabbi Eliezer is the Kula and the Chachamim are the Chumrah, and then say, Amar Rav Papa, and then reverse that completely and say that Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov is the Chumrah and the Chachamim are the Kula based on the statement of Amar Rav and Amar Rabbi Yochanan. And he says that's not a way for the Shas to flip as to which position is the Kula and which position is the Chumrah between the Havamina and the Maskana. In addition, those was bothered by the Gemara in general, as to how can he explain or have a case where you do Amshacha for the entire mikveh, and the mikveh is Kshera. We have loads and loads of Mishnayot that seem to indicate otherwise, that you have to have make Shamim in order for the mikveh to be Kshera, and you can't just have Mayim Shuvim make the mikveh Kshera. And therefore the Rabbeinu Shmuel says that he has a Mesor from his Rebbeim, that when you are Himshicha Kula, when you do Amshacha on the entire mikveh, means all Mayim Shuvim done through Amshacha, and over here Rabbi Rabbi Yochan says it's Kshera, that's only in the case where Meg Shamim of Meg Sa'ah fall into the mikvah afterwards. Though the Reed then says later on, that original question about flipping the position from Kula to Chumrah is not a real question. We do find examples of that in Shas. And the Reed goes on to list examples of where that happened. And then Tosafot says something very interesting. It says, Pasaka Rav Avram Bar David, the Lacha Ki Yosef Ben Choni. That the halacha is like this. And therefore, when you want to clean out the mikveh, and they are taking water out of the mikveh to clean the mikveh, and obviously when you're drawing the water out, they don't have drainage systems in those days, when they're taking the water out of the mikveh, they're drawing it out with buckets. So now, what ends up happening is that some of the water that you were taking out falls out of the bucket back into the mikveh, or some of the water is left behind. The water that's residual at the bottom of the mikveh, it fell out, and the new Megishamim comes in, maybe that three Lugim at the bottom is going to ruin the new mikveh when the Megishamim came in. You don't have to worry if there's a little bit of that water left at the bottom of the mikveh, even though it's coming from the buckets that you're drawing out the water with, so it's Mayim Shuvim, and in totality, there's more than three Lugim of Mayim Shuvim, because that's a cumulative amount of water that was left behind from all the drawings of water that you took out. Cumulatively, there's three lugim there, but it means it fell out of more than three kelim. It fell out of numerous kelim. It may be the same kli, but numerous times that you were drawing, and therefore it's not a problem. Mashloshag lugim di posel. And so Tosafot says, when you're cleaning the mikveh, and you're dredging out the mikveh, and you're pulling the water out, if there's three lug left behind that fell out of buckets along the way, you don't have to really worry about it. You can fill the mikveh again with Megi Shamim, and those three lugim shuvim will not be problematic. But then he writes, V'yesh machmirim. There are some people who are machmir about this. The bucket that they draw the water out, they make a hole in it of kones mashcheh, big enough that if you submerge the bucket in water, it could fill the water from that hole. Because that makes it an ois kli. And therefore, when you're taking the bucket and drawing the water out of the mikveh, it's not a mayim shuvim because it's not a kli. And if it's not a kli, it's not drawn water. And therefore, any water that falls out is not going to be a problem of mayim shuvim. But obviously, that makes it much harder to take the water out. You're trying to take the water out as a race. You're scooping the water in the bucket and it's running out of this konis mashkeh hole while you're trying to get out of the mikveh. So it'll take much longer and much more difficult to empty out the mikveh in that case. But then you won't have a problem with mayim shuvim whatsoever. Right now, back in the Gemara, ein mechatat nase mechatat. Mechatat only become mechatat when they're placed, the afer, the ashes are placed into the water. Mantana, once again, who's the author of this position. Mechia ba'avram Rabbi Yochanan, delo ki Rabbi Shimon. Not Rabbi Shimon. The Tanya, hiktim afar lemayim pasul. If you put in the ashes, here it's afar, it's the dirt, but we'll see why, because the pasuk uses the term afar, but it's really afar. It means the ashes were put in first, before you put in the water, it's pasul. Rabbi Shimon, makshir. Rabbi Shimon says it's totally fine. My time at the Rabbi Shimon. What's the reasoning behind Rabbi Shimon's position? Diktiv. V'lakol etamei me'afar sreifat achatat, benatan alav mayim chayim el keli. So here's the pasuk. The pasuk says, "V'lachol letamei me'afar," from the dirt of the sreifat hachatat, of the burning of the chatat, the paraduma. The burning of the paraduma makes afar; it does not make afar. So why do you have the word afar in there? And then it says, "V'natan alav ma'im chayim el keli." Betanya, Rabbi Shimon Omer, "B'chi afar hu? Is it dirt? Alo afar hu? It's ashes." Shina katub imashma'o. So then why did the Torah write it as afar when it's supposed to write afer? Ladunem enu gzera shava. To make a gzera shava of afar, afar. Nemar kan afar. It says by the paraduma afar srefat achatat. And it says nehalan. Really back, not further on, but back in the beginning of Bamidbar and Parshat Naso, with regards to the sota, afar. Over there it also mentions that there's afar that's put together with the maize sota. Malalan afar agav mayim. Just like by the sota, the afar goes on the water. Because the pasuk by the sota says in Perakei Pasuk Yudzayin, Vlakach HaKoen Mayim Toshim Bikli Chares, Umin afar Hashem Yeh Bekarka Mishkani, Kach HaKoen Natan Ela Mayim. That's very clear that you're putting the afar into the mayim. Afkan afar agav mayim. So to over here, by the case of the paraduma, the afar, or here the afar, goes on top of the water. Umakan, and also like over here, by the paraduma, imiktim afar lamayim kasher. If you put in the afar, or really the afar, the ashes in first, and then the water afterwards, it's kasher bidiavad. Af sham, so too over there, iktim afar lamayim kasher. By the sota, if you put in the afar before you put in the water, bidiavad, it is kasher. Now there's an assumption that when it comes to the paraduma, that putting in the afar before the water is only a problem with chatchila, but b'diavad it works. And the Gemara wants to know, how do you know that over here, when you put the afar in first, it's okay? It's trekroik tive. It says two psukim. It's really not two psukim. It's one pasuk, two halves of the pasuk, which is benatan alav mayim chayim el keli. So it says benatan alav ama efer bereisha. And that sounds like when it says natan alav mayim, it means you're putting the water on top of something. And on top of something makes it sound like it's the efer chatat. So it sounds like the efer chatat is there, v'natan alav. And then on top of that, you put the water. So that's the first statement of the pasuk. V'adraktiv, mayim chayim el keli. And then the latter half of the pasuk says you put the water, or the live spring water, into the kli. Makes it sound like the only thing in the kli, or the only thing between the mayim and the kli is the kli, because the mayim chayim is going into the kli and there's nothing else there. Which means that the mayim goes first and the afer goes afterwards. Ha ketzad. How does that work? Ratza afar lamato, ratza afar lamalo. You can put the afar down below. I mean, you can put it in first. Or ratza afar lamalo. Or you can put it in on top. Now, again, we would still favor saying the chatchila, we want you to put it on top. But if you put it in first, it's also okay. And that you can see in Tosafot where he says that if in the end it doesn't matter, then gezeirah shava the mayato. Then what's the whole point of the gezeirah shava? Fish lomar. You have to say that the gezeirah shava teaches you the mitzvah be'inan mayim tchila v'achar kach efer. That's still better to put the water in first, and then the afar, the efer, like it says by Sota. That's the point of the gezeirah shava. Even though both of them are viable ways to do it, nevertheless, we still favor doing it in the way that it's found explicitly in the psukim. So the Gemara says, "V'tana didan, my taima." What's the reason behind our tana's position? Our tana's position is that you've got to put in the water first, and then the afer afterwards. And if you do it the other way around, it's problematic. Amar lecha, sefer dekra dafka. The latter half of the pasuk is dafka, which is mayim chayim el keli. The water goes into the kli, which means it's the first thing in the kli. And the resha, which says v'natan alav, is lav dafka. So then, v'natan alav, la'arvan. V'natan alav means you put it on top of it, but on top of it doesn't mean that that's what you do at first. Doesn't mean you put the water on top of the afer. It means once you put the afer in, you move the water on top of the afer, or you mix it up. Now the Gemara says, my chazit, how did you know which one to say is dafka, and which one to say lav dafka? Damart seifa dekra dafka, why doma the resha dafka? How do you know the latter half of the pasuk is dafka and the first half of the pasuk is lav dafka? Maybe it's read the other way around. The first half of the pasuk is dafka and the water's got to go on top. And the latter half of the pasuk is lav dafka, and that's larvan. So the Gemara says, lo matzit amart. You can't say that. Ma metzinu b'chol makom. Like we find in other places, makshir lamala. The makshir always goes on top. So just like in other places, the makshir goes on top. Afkan makshir lamala. So too over here, the makshir goes on top. And where does he know that the makshir goes on top? That Rashi explains. Me matzinu b'chol makom is kagon besota afar lamala shu makshir et amayim. Because if you had just sota alone, we said before, we learned from sota that the afar goes into the mayim. But there it says, v'natan afar el amayim. that you have to put the afar into the water by sotah, and so therefore by sotah it's clear that the afar goes on top or goes in after the water is already present. Even Rabbi Shimon, who thinks that the other way around is okay, he doesn't learn that from sotah. He learns that from here by paraduma, and then takes it from paraduma and applies it to the gzer shava back to sotah to say that sotah is okay in that manner. Therefore, it could be that Rabbi Shimon agrees to this idea that the chatchila, the machshir, should go on top, because that's the pashtut of pasuk in sotah, is that the afar or the efer should go in the mala, right? Bein beit apras, usay beit apras. Matnitin deloka Rabbi Eliezer. Our Mishnah is not like Rabbi Eliezer. Titznan, we have a Mishnah in Ohalot. Rabbi Eliezer omer, beit apras, usay beit apras. It's the exact opposite of our Mishnah. Our Mishnah says, ein beit apras, usay beit apras. He says it does. Oseh beta press, beta press, oseh beta press. Rabbanan, ad kama. So then, what's the Rabbanan's position with regards to this? When they disagree with Rabbi Eliezer, how far do they think a beta press could go? Ki atar avdimi amar ish lakish amar Rabbi Shim ba'aba, shlosh sadot ushtei manot. It is 3 fields and 2 furrows. Bikama melo ma'ana. And how much is a melo ma'ana? How much is a furrow? Me'ama. A standard furrow goes longwise. The length of a standard furrow is 100 amot. Kedetanyo, like we have a brayta, a choresh et a kever, someone who plowed over a grave. Ose beta pras mlomana mehama. He makes a beta pras, the length of a furrow, which is 100 amot. So now, Rashi over here explains the machloket in the following manner. Rashi says the machloket is how many fields are affected by the field that is a Beit HaPras. According to the Chachamim, they said shtei sadot, 2 fields, and a 2 manot. The amount of 2 manot, which is manalazu, 100 amot, for each one of them, that is the amount that they are considered to be a Beit HaPras. So now what Rashi says is, when you plow a field, you either plow it east to west, or you plow it north to south. You only plow it in one direction. So then, the fields that are to the east and to the west, if you plow it east-west, according to the Chachamim, they're affected by the Beit HaPras. So the Beit HaPras extends from the Sadeh that you're in to the Sadeh to the east, the Sadeh to the west, because you're plowing east-west. If you plow north-south, then the east-west fields would not be affected, only the north-south fields would be affected. And then you have 2 Sadot, one north, one south, that are affected by the Beit HaPras. And again, the distance of the Beit HaPras is 100 amot. The Sadeh in which the Kever is found, the entire Sadeh is Tmeah, because we don't know where the Kever is. So we never know where to start the Meah Mot from. We just know it's somewhere in this field. Since it's somewhere in this field, the entire field is Tmeah. Then outside of the field, to the 2 adjacent fields, to the east or west, or north-south, depending which direction you're plowing it, those 2 fields have a maximum of 100 amot, and that's the Shtei Manot. Shtei Sadot, Shtei Manot. 2 Manot, 1 Maneh for each Sadeh, on each side of the field in the direction that you're plowing the field, east to west or north to south. That's Rashi's view as to what the Chachamim say. Rabbi Eliezer disagrees, and Rabbi Eliezer says that you affect all 4 sides. And therefore you can make a Beit HaPras in all 4 directions, not just in east-west, not just in north-south, but it'll be north, east, south, and west. All 4 directions have a Beit HaPras, and that's what it means, Beit HaPras, Oseh Beit HaPras. That's Rashi's view as to what the Machloket is. Tosafot says he doesn't understand that. Why would Rabbi Eliezer disagree? How can it be that Rabbi Eliezer thinks that the fields that are opposite, perpendicular to the plowing furrows, that they get to become a beta press? The plow never went in that direction. So why would you think that it spreads to the fields north and south if you're plowing east-west? And vice versa, if it's plowing north-south, why would you think the fields in the east or west become a beta press? So Tosafot then brings a different view. L'cheni rela feresh, he thinks this is the explanation of the Gemara. Rabbi Eliezer Omer, Beit HaPras, Oseh Beit HaPras, that as long as there's a field adjacent to the field where the Beit HaPras was, the next field becomes a Beit HaPras. You plow from field number 1 into field number 2, if it's the same direction, you're playing east-west, so it's east of there or west of there, you plow into that next field also becomes a Beit HaPras. And then if you plow from that second field into a third field, that third field also becomes a Beit HaPras. Ad le'olam. That goes on forever. As long as you keep plowing from a field that was plowed by the original field that had the kever in it, and you plow from that field into another field, and then from that other field into another field, each one of them extends the Beit HaPras, and you can create a chain link of Beit HaPrasot, because each one of them, after you plowed in it, becomes a Beit HaPras, and then has the capacity to make a new beta press in that direction. That's the view of Rabbi Eliezer. On the other hand, the Chachamim disagree and say that you have a limit. There's only two fields, one on each side, and there's a limit. Even on the two fields that are on each side of the direction of the furrows of the plowing, they only extend 100 amot in each direction. I mean, the original field plus 100 amot to the east, 100 amot to the west, if you're plowing east-west. In the new Sadot, those are considered to be a beta press. Beyond that, there is no beta press. And even if you plow from those fields to the next fields, the subsequent fields are not beta press. It's limited to the original field and two adjacent fields, each field 100 amot in length. So seemingly this is explanation of the position of the Rabbonon, who argue on Rabbi Eliezer, and that's the way that Rashi explains it over here. But if you look in the Shita Mekubetzet Otev Vav, he takes out the word Rabbonon, and then that would be the explanation of Rabbi Eliezer's position and not the Chachamim's position, and that's what the Sfat Emet suggests over here, that the position of the Chachamim is simply that when you plow 100 amot in each direction, that's what's called a Beit HaPras, meaning that you have what's called a Beit Sa'ah. Beit Sa'ah is 100 amot by 100 amot. So you have four Beit Sa'ot that surround the area of what you plowed or where we think the kever is. And that becomes the Beit HaPras. And then the Ad Kamo in the Gemara is explaining the position of Rabbi Eliezer. Okay, we're going to stop here by the two dots on the top of Yud Gimel Amud Aleph.